Hey everyone, it's Carla Jean. A quick note before we get started. You probably know that we are actually writers and not podcasters by trade. So I hope you'll bear with us as we learn some things as we go along. We had a little audio quirkiness this week. You'll hear it in some segments, but I hope you'll stick with us because this is a pretty interesting episode.
Welcome to Triple Take, the podcast where we talk to interesting people about the book, album, and film that shaped them. I'm Carla Jean Whitley.
I'm John Hammontree.
And I'm Matt Scalise.
Our guest today is Stuart McLaren, the president of the White House Historical Association and the keynote speaker of the upcoming Alabama Humanities Foundation luncheon. Thank you for joining us, Stuart.
Thank you, John. It's great to be with you today.
I know in the past you have worked at Montevallo's American Village, as well as George Washington's Mount Vernon Estate, the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation, the Motion Picture Association of America, Georgetown, the American Red Cross, and also the federal government. So, but at heart, you're an Alabamian. Is that right?
That's right. I grew up in Birmingham and attended the old Shades Valley High School, and then went to university in Tuscaloosa, which I still love and enjoy getting back down there as frequently as I can. And in fact, I keep a home in Tuscaloosa so that I can have a base of operations there.
And I think you were there for two national championships?
That's right. Yes. It was about as common then as it is today.
Yes, it's a very fortunate time to be an Alabamian. Well, tell us a little bit about the White House Historical Association and what you do there.
Well, the association is a wonderful organization. It's nonprofit, nonpartisan. We exist to serve the White House regardless of who the president is, regardless of what party is in power. We were actually founded by Jackie Kennedy in 1961 when she was First Lady. And remember, she was only 32 years old when she became First Lady of the United States. But she was wise to know that what she needed then that First Ladies after her would need, and that would be to have a private partner to fund things in the White House that the Congress would not fund or that there weren't government funds to support, like conservation, preservation, keeping those state floor rooms at the museum quality, and also to acquire art and furnishings for the permanent White House collection. It was actually not until the Kennedy administration was there a permanent collection in the White House. Before then, a new president could come in and get rid of anything he wanted to, and he did. Chester Arthur hauled off 20 wagon loads of things. Mary Todd Lincoln sold off furnishings of the White House, feeling she would be destitute after the president's assassination. Other presidents just didn't like what was in the White House, and so they out with the old and in with the new. But Mrs. Kennedy felt like the White House should contain and represent the very best of America, and that's what she set about to do. And she created us to be the private partner to provide resources and funding to make that possible, which we still do today.
So when a new president moves in now, does the outgoing president set the furniture that they had used, does that transfer over to the White House Historical Association, or does some of it stay?
Well, the collection stays just like it would stay in an art museum in Alabama or the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. The collection is the collection. But upstairs, in their private quarters, where they actually sleep and live as a family, they can bring their own furniture and redo that to their liking and make that suitable, make it feel like home, because it is home to them. The White House, in a very small footprint of real estate, is home to the president and his family, office to the president and his staff, and it's also the ceremonial stage upon which America's most important visitors visit our country. For example, this week, the Prime Minister of Italy has arrived and was received by the president at the White House, and state dinner held in his honor. So all of this happens in a very small space. But to your question, upstairs in the private residence, they can bring their own furniture, and they're given a little bit of money from the government to redo that area to make it feel like home to them.
Now, when, let's say, for example, the national championship-winning Alabama Crimson Tide football team visits the White House and delivers a jersey or a helmet, is that something that is turned over to the Historical Association, or does that go to the archive? Or where do the things that the president receives go?
Well, every year when the Alabama football team comes to Washington, actually those items are usually given to the president, and you'll know, you'll recall they're personalized, usually a jersey with his name on it or something like that. And those usually go to the presidential library of that president.
Okay.
So if you go to those libraries, so you'll find memorabilia connected to college championships, World Series, Super Bowls that occurred when those presidents were in office.
And you were involved with the Reagan Library, or is the foundation something separate?
Somewhat separate, but together, and I'll explain that. The presidential libraries are a wonderful system in our country, and the Obama Library will be the 14th since they came into being under President Roosevelt, FDR. And there are two parts to each library. There's the actual archival part, where all of the president's papers and gifts and official records are kept, and those are inventoried and curated and made available to scholars and others who need to have access to those materials. And that is operated by a branch of the federal government up in the National Archives and Records Administration, the same building that houses the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence here in Washington. Those are the people that manage those documents at the presidential libraries. But they have a companion effort that is under the same roof usually, and that is a foundation that is private in nature, and that group promotes the legacy of that president, more of the policies and the politics and what the man was and what he represented throughout the course of his life. And those two sides work together, usually under the roof of the same library, and they're very collaborative and cooperative, but they have different interests, and one is government and one is private. It's a great public-private partnership.
If anybody wants to find out more information about the White House Historical Association or the White House, where should they go?
Well, we have a terrific website, www.whitehousehistory.org, first of all. Second of all, our daily dose of information that you can receive by following us on Facebook and Twitter is really wonderful content. Our historians put a lot of thought into that each day, and you really get a nice snack of information about the White House.
Okay, Stuart, well, we brought you here today to chat about the book, album, and film that have most influenced you in your career. Can you tell us today what your selections were?
On the book front, I had talked about America's President's book that I received when I was in elementary school, and I still have it today. And I think that actually lit a spark in me. It began my interest in American history and the history of the presidents that has even led its way to, found its influenced me in my career today. Of course, I'm interested in all sorts of biographies, particularly presidential biographies, and those remain very interesting to me as well. And then the movie, probably a movie that's my favorite, is Chariots of Fire in 1981, the British historical drama about Eric Lytle and the 1924 Olympics. And I found that to be very inspirational, and it's one of those movies that I can watch 100 times and still be moved by it and inspired by. And then also reaching back to about that time frame, a little earlier than that, was my freshman year at the University of Alabama, and I loved the album, the Dan Fogelberg album, Netherlands, and I still listen to that from time to time, and it's a great album and it brings back great memories.
I am intrigued to learn about this book of presidents that you said had such a role on your life. So tell me, about how old were you when you received the book, and from whom did you receive it?
Well, it was a book that I actually was given by my grandparents, and I would have been 6 or 7 years old. And at the time, the book only went up through Lyndon Johnson because he was president at the time. But I treated it almost like my Bible, if you will. I studied each president and read each biography and wanted to know more about each. And I really do think that that lit a fire in me at the time about American history and about presidential biography.
So what kind of format did the book take? Was it you know, more of a storybook, or was it pretty straightforward biography? Tell me a little bit about the content itself.
On the cover was a little oval of each presidential portrait in black and white, and there was a page for every president, and it was another photograph, and then the biographical information, and then information about their accomplishments, achievements, and life in America under their presidency. And ironically, here at the White House Historical Association, we publish books as well. And one of our books that we do, we publish with each new president, is a book on the presidents and a book on the first ladies. So we have here a next generation version of that book that was so meaningful to me at such a young age. And I'm involved in the publishing of, in fact, we were working on the next edition that will come out in January with the biography and information, including President Obama, and teeing up whoever the next president will be, which we'll know in a few weeks.
That's very cool. So it's a project that has really come full circle for you.
It has, and of course, as I look back over my life, I can see this cord of continuity through the various things I've done that have brought me to this role today, but also the influence of books and people and events in my life that have done the same. And I think that little hardback book given to me by my grandparents when I was 6 or 7 years old had an impact on my interests that is still alive today.
So do you remember, as you read that book as a child, was there any particular president or a particular president's accomplishment that stood out to you?
I don't remember being particularly partisan. I didn't grow up in a politically active family necessarily. And I had people in my family that were parts of both parties, extended families in North Carolina and, of course, family in Alabama. And I was very interested in the electoral process. I remember at an early age watching both political conventions, and being very interested in what was happening, and the excitement of that to me was inspirational. But I don't recall at that age having a particular president that meant more to me than another did. I think that, like all young Americans, you learn about the founding fathers, and clearly George Washington was important among those and still is to me. And then the presidents at the time, Johnson, and of course after the assassination of President Kennedy, I have clear memories of watching the funeral of President Kennedy on television, and then the transition to President Johnson. And of course now, here in Washington, in my role with the White House Historical Association, I work with people that were part of those events. Believe it or not, we still have people involved in our work who worked with President and Mrs. Kennedy and worked closely with President and Mrs. Johnson. And it's like these movies of life coming through to me, interacting with these people who were integral to those events of my youth. And now I'm working with them day in and day out in this job.
And it's easy to see how this book has affected the career path that you've taken, but has it informed your character, who you are as a person, in any way?
I think it's important, as we look at presidents throughout history, they all had people in their lives who were significant and important. Most, there was a first lady. Many, there were key staff people. There were people around them in cabinet departments or who were officials in other areas. Some were very close to powerful journalists of their day or business people of their day. And we look back through history and we see these 44 individuals who've led our country, but each of them had an infrastructure of life around them that supported them and helped make them who they are. And I've enjoyed being that type of person that's been a part of the infrastructure and not necessarily the principal in that role. But that's my story.
Who has been that infrastructure? Who's provided that infrastructure for you?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. Family has been important to me, and having the support of my parents over the years has been terrific. Close friends that I've maintained throughout my life are very important to me. I like to have a very collaborative and collegial work environment. We have about 50 people on our staff here at the White House Historical Association, and we work very hard, and I push them to do a lot of work and have it done at the highest level of excellence that we can attain. So that group of people is important to me. I've always enjoyed I've always benefited from engagement in a church and a faith community where I've lived, and so the pastor there and the people in that church community have been important to me. But I'm amazed at how we move through life and we meet new people along the way, and I like to think that people are in our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And certainly I have people that are in my life from all three categories and are very meaningful and influential. In fact, many of them are going to be at the event at the Alabama Humanities Foundation, and I have the privilege of giving a remark to. Many of my very close Alabama friends will be there, and it'll be good to see them.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like that'll be something to look forward to.
For me, it is, yes.
All right, for your film, you chose Chariots of Fire from 1981 from director Hugh Hudson. Now, this is a movie that definitely has permeated pop culture in a specific way, as some movies often do. And this movie, certainly, I think, the way that it made it through, even to people who haven't seen the movie, is the very memorable score from Vangelis. But it is a movie that I think a lot of people end up discovering, whether it's because they're on a mission to see, Best Picture winners or movies from the early 80s, that it's a bit of a forgotten period, I think, sometimes for movie buffs. But why is this movie the one that you chose, and why does it stand out so much to you?
Well, it came out at an exciting time in my life. I just graduated from the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa and was heading out into the real world. And this movie came out, and I was really intrigued by it, inspired by it, challenged by it. The story of this young Olympian, two young Olympians actually, and how their upbringings, one is a Scottish Christian and one is an English and Jewish, how their competition as well as their friendship and the challenges they faced with their principal convictions. And when they were challenged in the 1924 Olympics, Eric Little, as a devout Christian, did not believe in racing on Sunday, and that was a challenge that was presented to him when his race was scheduled for a Sunday at the 1924 Olympics. And, these are things that don't occur to us in the modern context. But the movie takes you through stories of powerful religious conviction, strong dynamic of friendship, intense patriotism and love of country, competition on the world stage through the Olympics, the wonderful musical score that you mentioned, and the beautiful scenery of my ancestors are from Scotland, and much of this was filmed in Scotland. In fact, that iconic scene of the runners on the beach in St. Andrews, where this was filmed, is a wonderful image in my mind's eye today about the movie.
Yeah, it certainly does have an iconic look to it. And I think the look of this movie and the theme of it both kind of hit a very interesting tone, which is this sort of romanticized look at the earlier parts of the 20th century, which is the thing that I think if you watch a lot of movies from the 80s, this is a theme that a lot of people revisited. It was a time that it seems like Americans were really thinking, Americans and Brits too, I guess, were thinking a lot about the way that people lived and the way that people acted in the earlier part of the 20th century, earlier generations. There was a sense that, maybe men were made of different stuff back then. And I think there's definitely a lot of that in this movie.
I think that's true. And of course, times are different. And the way that we communicate, the way that we travel, the American Olympic team had to travel by ship to go to the Olympics in 1924. And today, you know, they'll hop on a jet and they'll be in Rio in a few hours. And the way that we communicate and follow our sports heroes is instantaneously online. And at that point, you had to wait for the next day's newspaper really to find out what was going on. So it was a slower, more thoughtful time of life. And people took time to really, I think and consider the reasons that they did things. And so many times we act flippantly and quickly and in the moment, like some of our Olympians may have done recently in Rio. But this takes us back to a time when the sport was purely amateur. That's a big part of the theme of the movie as well. And these young people were thought leaders among their peers, and they challenged each other in very interesting ways. And I'd find it's one of these movies that I can watch over and over again, and each time be inspired by a different element of it.
Now, this is a movie that you said you experienced it when you were around college age. I'm curious, with your time working with the Motion Picture Association, you know, how big of a part of your identity, I guess, as you were coming out of college and you know, going into, you know, your working life, how big were movies to you just as a part of your life?
I think it would have been at that point in my life, right out of college, it was entertainment. You know, I remember going to see Star Wars right around my freshman year of college. I remember Animal House right around my freshman year of college. These tentpole movies that are still memorable to me and, you know, still watch from time to time. But I think you referenced my years at the Motion Picture Association, and, you know, I began to see film as a much more important medium. You know, there are people around the world, billions of people around the world, that American movies are the only Americans they will ever see or ever even meet. And that's the first impression they get of our country is through motion pictures. And so it's a very important tool that I don't think movie studios and directors and producers always stop to consider, that their creation may be the first impression that someone has of our country, or a lasting impression that someone has of our country, or a misimpression that someone will have of our country. But they are very powerful tools of communication and understanding about America and about the world today. But I saw them at that time purely as entertainment, and that was about it, much differently today.
During your freshman year, I believe, in college, Dan Fogelberg's album Netherlands came out. Tell me a little bit about how you first discovered this album.
Well, it does take me back to my freshman year in Alabama, and it's an album that I still listen to today. And you know, music is a wonderful thing, and my interest in music ranges from classical to contemporary and a wild range. I guess I would say, like, Cecilia Bartoli to Beyonce I would have on my iPhone. But, you know, this particular album, I mean, we think of things in albums rather than songs, is at a time in my life which was exciting and adventurous, and the sounds of this particular album are very late 1970s, and the songs in there are both soaring and brooding. There's elements of optimism and elements of darkness, and very emotional type of album, but I think in a positive way. And just as music takes us back to different times and events and places in our life, this album takes me back to a fun, happy, carefree, time in my life, but yet a very important time in my life where I was growing and changing and evolving out of childhood into adulthood. And this was an album that was important to me at that critical time in my life.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you were recording today, this genre of music might be called Americana, but I guess he's a mixture of folk rock and soft rock. I was trying to describe him today to a friend, and he sounds a little bit like Van Morrison and the Eagles and the band Alabama all kind of rolled up into one.
But I think Dan Fogelberg actually had an opportunity to sing with the Eagles, and that he did not take advantage of. So that's a good connection that you would think of him as an Eagles person. But he was kind of, you know, between, you know, sort of a soft rock genre and a little more, a little beyond. He has a little James Taylor in him to me in an interesting way. But
yeah, I can see that. Is there a song on the album that stands out to you?
I think the title song, "The Netherlands," is a very soaring and a song, and I like the tune of it. I like the words of it, and I would say that one. Although, I mean, there are several of them on this album, but they all, to me, it's the whole. They're just parts of the whole. You know, it's the type of thing that I can remember. Driving around listening to in my Chevrolet Vega at the University of Alabama, and you know, bringing back memories of those days long ago and far.
So when you go back now, if you were to pop on Netherlands and drive around campus, I imagine it would still feel very different. Are there places on campus that still linger in your memory and you can return to and feel the same way?
Well, you know, the recent leadership at the university has really done wonderful things to grow the campus and the student population and the caliber of the education, its rankings nationally. It's really a beautiful campus as well. I don't think the campus at Tuscaloosa has ever looked nicer than it does now. But yet, although it's changed, there's so many things about it that take me back. To my days in college, and if you look carefully at the historic elements around campus, take you back to the very beginnings of the university, and there are wonderful, rich historical traditions there on that campus that I hope students could pause and take a look at and realize are part of something that's larger, greater, and more significant than their 4 years there. They're part of something that's been around for a long time, and a lot of great people have come through that university and gone on to do significant things. So, you know, every time I go back to campus, every time I'm in Tuscaloosa, I think about those days that I was there, and I think about the things that influenced me, whether it was music or friends or classes, certainly. Those are things that were really influential and foundational in my life that remain important to me today. And I love going back to Tuscaloosa. I keep a house there and get back there as often as I can, and enjoy thinking about that as a home base for me and an important place in my life then and now.
I agree. I mean, I go back every chance that I get, and I only graduated 6 years ago, and it's amazing how different the campus looks now as opposed to when I graduated.
I'm John Hammontree. You can find me on Twitter at John Hammontree.
I'm Matt Scalise. You can find me on social media at Matt Scalise.
I'm Carla Jean Whitley, and you can find me all over social stuff at Inkstained Life.
And y'all be sure to download us on iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks.